really enjoying going through this book. And Judges is one of those books that people think, what's in there? And the more I'm getting into it, the more I'm seeing how rich it is. And I hope you are enjoying God's meal of Judges, the book of Judges, because it's a rich meal. It's very 21st century. It sounds so ancient when you read it, but when you see what's going on, it's so today. Some of you know Wen Jing. Wen Jing used to be part of AIF, and she, when she was here, she shared a story of a time when how God gave her her job. So most of you remember that story, and I remember talking with her afterwards, and she was saying that she had shared that story with somebody, a Chinese person that she knew who was not a Christian, and that. That person said to her, oh, you didn't get that job because God gave you that job. You got that job because you worked hard, or because it was you that got that job, not God. And that's really two different perspectives on life, isn't it? On what happens. Did you get the job because God gave you the job, or did you get the job because you worked hard? And it's very easy to forget God. And of course, people who do not have God in their perspective do it even easier. But it's also easy for us who have God in our perspective to forget God. It's easy for us to think that we are self-sufficient. Me too, by the way. See, I see what I do. I mean, I'm doing it, you know? I see my work. But God's hand is often invisible. And I don't necessarily see God's hand in the work that I might be doing. And yet, it's there. God's hand is there. I wonder if we realize how much we need God. I mean, really realize it. In the midst of life. I mean, if God were to pack his bags and leave, what would you have? Remove God and earth is hell. Remove God, you take away peace for the soul. Remove God and you remove righteousness. Remove God and you are weak and powerless. God gives you forgiveness. God gives you joy. God gives you food to eat. He gives you the sun and the rain. And the air that you breathe is God's. Remove God and there is no air anymore. God gives you an apartment to live in. He gives you a job to work. He gives you. We could go on. Where would you be without God? Now, to ignore God's role in all of this, to be honest, it's quite frankly arrogance. That's what it is, to ignore God's role in life. Now, as we've been looking in the book of Judges, we've been seeing that the people of Israel have been doing just that very thing. They are ignoring what God has been doing for them throughout the book of Judges. They run away from God and they run to other gods. They cry out to God when it hurts, simply because it hurts. And God delivers them. He saves them from the oppression of all these different kings and peoples. And they immediately turn their backs on God and run away from him. Now that's the pattern we've been seeing in Judges. The people of Israel are ignoring God. God saves them, and they forget that it was God who saved them. And so God leaves them to their enemies again for a while. Now, we've seen that pattern in this book. Today we're going to see that pattern again, except it's a little different. All throughout Judges, we've seen that pattern with the whole nation. Today we're going to see that pattern with one man. And that man is Samson. Now, Samson, we've already had a few stories of Samson. And we've already seen that he's strong, yes. He's got a temper, yes. He's fairly arrogant. He's pretty confident. Samson is a roller coaster of a man. He's wild, he's rambunctious, he's fleshly, he's sensuous, he's bold, he's rude, brazen. That's what he is. It's the English word. It's kind of like a combination. If bold and rude were to get married and have kids, the kid would be called brazen. That's what the word brazen means. Bold rudeness. That is Samson. But God's been using him. Let's start reading. We're in Judges chapter 16. You can turn there. I'm going to start reading about Samson, verse 1. Samson went to Gaza. Gaza is a town. It's in Philistia. It's a Philistine city. It's on real close to the coast of the Mediterranean Sea, way south in what is modern Israel. Today, actually, the city still stands, and it still is called Gaza today. It's in the West Bank. So Samson went to Gaza, and there he saw a prostitute, and he went into her. The Gazites were told, "Samson has come here," and they surrounded the place and set an ambush for him all night at the gate of the city. They kept quiet all night, saying, "Let's wait till the light of the morning, then we will kill him." But Samson lay till midnight, and at midnight he arose and took hold of the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts and pulled them up, bar and all, and put them on his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that is in front of Hebron. I'm going to stop there. Okay, here's that man, our roller coaster guy, our wild, rambunctious, sensuous, fleshly man, going into Gaza. By the way, that's a good distance into Philistia. He's not a Philistine. And so he just comes and goes into enemy territory at will. He doesn't care that he's walking quite a good distance into the territory of his enemies. He just doesn't think anything's going to happen to him. And so here he is with a prostitute. And it doesn't seem to bother him. I mean, remember, this guy was called to be a Nazirite from birth, and he's set apart for God for the purpose of beginning to save Israel from the Philistines. That's what chapter 13, verse 5 says. That's his purpose in life. He's set apart for God. So what is he doing with a prostitute then? People who are set apart for God aren't supposed to be sleeping with prostitutes. But it doesn't seem to bother him. He's Samson. You know, he's above that. He ignores his calling, and he sleeps with a prostitute in Gaza. Samson just does whatever he wants to do. And he says whatever he wants to say. Kind of sounds like Donald Trump in many ways today. Does what he wants, says what he wants. And so far, he's been getting away with it. Now, the Philistines discover, hey, Samson's in Gaza. Let's get him. This is their chance. He's in enemy territory. He's in one of their cities, sleeping with one of their prostitutes. And somebody sees him and says, Samson's in Gaza. And so people gather, and they set an ambush for him. And they basically say, all right, we got the city surrounded. We'll wait till the morning when it's light. And at light, we're going after him. We're going in. But Samson throws them a curveball. That's an idiom. It means Samson changes things on them. Samson decides he's done with the prostitute. It's midnight. I think I'm going home now. That's how Samson is. He just spur of the moment. You never know what this guy's going to do. At midnight, he decides he's done. He's going to go and leave. And so he gets up and he just goes right out the gate. In fact, he tears off the gate of the town and carries it to Hebron. Now, Hebron's 40 miles away. And so that's quite a feat for Samson, the strong man, to do. And the ambush wasn't ready for this. Probably most of them are sleeping because that was the plan. We'll wait till the morning. When it's light, we go in. And so he didn't have to worry about a whole lot of people, very likely, at midnight. He didn't know that, but God did. Wouldn't surprise me if God is involved in that. God getting him up in the middle of the night and saying, Samson, you need to leave. And so Samson, he's just going to go. Apparently, God is not done using this prostitute-loving man. Apparently. Because if God was done using him, he'd have slept till morning and woken up at light, or he might not have woken up at all. God spares him. And then we get a new story. We just get scenes from Samson's life. That was one of the scenes. We get a new scene now. Verse 4. After this, he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up to her and said to her, seduce him. See where his great strength lies, and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him to humble him. And we will each give you 1,100 pieces of silver. Samson is in love. We've heard that before, haven't we? Every time we turn around, this man is in love. It's another woman. If it's not this woman, it's this one over here. This is Samson. Women are obviously his weakness. He may be a strong man. He may be hard to overpower. But let's try a woman. See, the Philistines see in Delilah an opportunity. And they have not been able to overpower Samson. But they haven't tried the wiles of a woman yet. And so, why not? Let's try it. Let's see if this woman can get him to fall. And so they ask Delilah to get some information from him. We need to find out where his strength comes from. Because unless we can turn off his strength. We just can't take him. He's too strong. And they offer her 1,100 pieces of silver each, it says. The lords of the Philistines each. Now, there were five major cities in Philistia, each of which had a lord. And so that's 5,500 pieces of silver, roughly. To put that in perspective, David, King David, when he, you remember the story, he had the census, the plague comes, and then he offers to buy the piece of land where he sees the angel because he's going to build an altar there. That piece of land, he bought a piece of land for 50 pieces of silver. Now, put that in perspective, they're going to give this woman 5,500 pieces of silver. 50 will buy a parcel of land. She's getting 5,500. This is more like $5 million than $500. This is quite a bounty. Samson has a bounty on his head. A bounty, by the way, is a reward for the capture of a criminal. That's a bounty. And Samson's bounty is pretty steep. This woman will be rich for the rest of her life if she succeeds. And you know what Delilah sees? She doesn't see Samson. She sees dollar signs. She sees an opportunity to have her future settled for the rest of her life, right here. This is her ticket to the good life. And so, Delilah goes straight to work. Verse 6. So Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies, and how you might be bound, that one could subdue you. Samson said to her, if they bind me with seven fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. Then the lords of the Philistines brought up to her seven fresh bowstrings that had not been dried, and she bound him with them. Now she had men lying in ambush in an inner chamber, and she said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. But he snapped the bowstrings as a thread of flax snaps when it touches the fire. So the secret of his strength was not known. Then Delilah said to Samson, behold, you have mocked me and told me lies. Please tell me how you might be bound. And he said to her, if they bind me with new ropes that have not been used, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. So Delilah took new ropes and bound him with them and said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And the men lying in ambush were in an inner chamber. But he snapped the ropes off his arms like a thread. Then Delilah said to Samson, until now you have mocked me and told me lies. Tell me how you might be bound. And he said to her, if you weave the seven locks of my head with the web and fasten it tight with the pin, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. So while he slept, Delilah took the seven locks of his head and wove them into the web. And she made them tight with the pin and said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. But he awoke from his sleep and pulled away the pin, the loom, and the web. And she said to him, how can you say, I love you, when your heart is not with me? You have mocked me these three times. You have not told me where your great strength lies. And when she pressed him hard with her words, day after day, and urged him, his soul was vexed to death. Vexed means troubled. And he told her all his heart and said to her, "A razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If my head is shaved, then my strength will leave me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man." We'll stop there for right now. Now, Delilah goes to work. She's trying to get the information. Samson is playing a game with her. This is like the riddle me this earlier, you know, kind of game that he played earlier. "Oh, just tie me up with fresh bowstrings. That'll do the trick." Well, that doesn't do the trick. "Oh, well, try this. Weave my hair into the loom. That'll do the trick." That doesn't do the trick. "New ropes." No, new ropes doesn't work. Delilah is not playing a game. She's not real amused. This is no ha 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 to Delilah. This is $5 million to Delilah. And she's not in a joking mood. She wants the information. Now, it may be that after round one, Samson also sees that she's not playing a game. But he doesn't care. He's Samson. No one defeats Samson. No one's ever defeated Samson. He's cocky. "You think you can take me down? You go ahead, you try. Yeah, try. Try ropes. See if you think you can do it with ropes. Try bowstrings. Try weaving my hair." That's part of it. He's cocky. But he's also in love. Samson loved a woman, said. Now, sometimes people read this and they say, "How can he be so stupid?" You were thinking that. Don't just, you know you were. When I was reading that story, you were thinking, "This guy, how can he be so dumb?" And I get the question. I'm with you. Samson has the brains of those guys in the beer commercials. But let me ask you a question. Have you ever seen how stupid people can be when they're in love? Yes. I've seen it. And have you ever seen how stupid people can be when they're really cocky? Okay, put those two things together. It's like stupid on steroids. And that's Samson right now. That's where he is. And so Delilah is tired of this game that Samson is playing. And verse 15, she pulls out the love card. "How can you say you love me when you won't share with me your innermost secrets, Samson?" That's the card that she's playing. Where does your strength come from? You're supposed to love me. And of course, he feels all these feelings for her, certainly. He's probably told her a bunch of times he loves her. Because she says, "How can you say it when you won't do it?" And then it says, verse 16, she pressed him hard day after day. And this is actually what wife number one did, if you remember the story from Riddle Me This. She did the same thing. And it was just miserable. Samson does not know how to pick a woman. He does not look at character. He hasn't picked a winner yet. This is, Delilah is woman number three, and they're all losers, all three of them. Delilah is a spider weaving a web. No pun intended from her weaving him into the womb. But she's weaving her web for her big giant grasshopper. That's what she is. And the grasshopper doesn't know it. And finally, verse 17. Samson tells her his heart. You see, he says, I've had this vow to God since before I was born. Now, notice Samson understands the vow that he has, is under. He understands his calling. He admits it right there in verse 17. And so it's not as if he doesn't really know what he's doing. But he doesn't take his calling seriously. He thinks he's above it. He thinks he can throw it away. After all, he is Samson, right? No one's ever messed with Samson and gotten away with it. So here's what happens. Verse 18. When Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called the lords of the Philistines, saying, come up again, for he's told me his heart. Then the lords of the Philistines came up to her and brought the money in their hands. She made him sleep on her knees, and she called a man and had him shave off the 7 locks of his head. Then she began to torment him, and his strength left him. And she said, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And he awoke from his sleep and said, I will go out as at other times and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. And the Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with bronze shackles. And he ground at the mill in the prison. Delilah sells Samson. You look at Delilah, and I see Satan in Delilah. Beautiful, enticing, deceptive, and deadly. That's what she is. And when she gets him, verse 19, she torments him. That's what Satan does. When he gets somebody, he torments them. The story, as I was just reading it this week, it was sad. It's like I just about wept at this story. She says, verse 20, the Philistines are on you, Samson. And he thinks he's okay. He thinks it's just like before. Nothing's changed. See, in the past, we've read 3 times already, and the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. And then it tells us what all the strength that he had, because the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. But there is no Spirit of the Lord rushing upon him here. In fact, it's just the opposite. The Spirit of the Lord is leaving him. Because it says he did not know that the Lord had left him. He thought one thing, but reality was something different. And I pictured this scene. I don't think this is, it's not in Scripture the way I'm going to describe it for you, but I don't think this is an unreasonable scene to picture. I think it probably something like this happened. I am picturing Samson, blind, humiliated, bound and overtaken right there in Delilah's home. And he's overhearing a conversation. And the Philistines are counting out money. 100, 200, 300, 400, 500 to Delilah, the woman he loved. That's the woman he loves. And now he's listening to them count out the money to her. The woman he loved who sold him into slavery. And now he's seeing what she really is, the woman he loved. Well, seeing, I perhaps, is the wrong word to use, since he's blind. And then he overhears one of them say, "It's been a pleasure to do business with you, Delilah. Thank you for your help." I think Samson would prefer to have been dead than to have heard that. But I bet he heard something like that right there in that room, just a few minutes after they gouge his eyes out. And I had that picture and just about wept at what had come to this man. Samson is the man who thinks he doesn't need God. This morning I was reading in, of all places, Minla, Daniel chapter 4. That's where I was reading this morning at home. And then we read it here today. And I thought, as I was reading it this morning, Samson is Nebuchadnezzar. Because Nebuchadnezzar stands on his balcony and looks at the glory of Babylon, over which he is king, and says, and he ascribes it all to himself. And God basically says, "Your time is done, Nebuchadnezzar. Let's show you who's really sovereign." Samson is Nebuchadnezzar. Samson is the pastor whom God used, who thinks he's too big to fall. He doesn't need God. "Don't you know who I am? Don't you know what I've done?" Samson is that guy. Samson is the professor at UT who thinks he's too smart for God. He doesn't need God. "Don't you know that's the silliest thing in the world?" Samson is the strong man relying on his strength, but who forgot that his strength comes from God. Samson is the teacher or the preacher who relies on his teaching or preaching skills and forgets God. And so God leaves him. Samson is the woman focused on her beauty or her charm, but who forgets that it was God who made her what she is, and that there are much more important things than that. Samson is the person who gets a job and thinks it's because of his own work that he gets the job, and not because God is in the process. Samson is the church today that relies on its relevance instead of on the Spirit and attracts many relevant people, but not many people who actually walk in the Spirit. Samson is the person who doesn't think he needs God. Samson has played games with God his whole life. He's tried God, he's tempted God. Samson is Israel. All throughout this book of Judges. But Israel doesn't see it. And neither do most of any of these other people that I just mentioned to you. They never quite see that they're ignoring God and that they need God and that it is God himself who has given them whatever it is that they have that has brought whatever success they have had. Samson thinks he can handle life, but he doesn't realize that he is wretched, pitiable, poor, blind, and naked. And so, God decides he'll give Samson a little help to realize that he really is weak, since he can't see it any other way. Let's see if he'll see it now. Some of you guys, you've got nice jobs. You may come from families that have wealth. You're very intelligent. And I don't really care how smart you are or how much money you have or what a nice job you've got. You're not above God. You need God. So do I. See, ignore God, and sooner or later, you're going to see that you need him. Better sooner than later.